Okay.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. Good to see you again. We are going to go ahead and get started this morning and let people continue trickling in. I am so excited for week 4 of our Anxious Generation Parenting Series. Today, I have the privilege and honor of welcoming Dr. Angela Smith. We had another Dr. Smith last week. Someone actually thought they were married, so I politely said they weren't. But two Dr. Smiths in a row, but in two different fields. Angela is a psychologist and a counselor, and I was so excited when I chatted with her. I didn't even realize when I asked her to speak for us that she specifically works with those that come in for counseling that are 18 and older that suffer from OCD or struggle with OCD, depression, anxiety, and disorders similar to that. And so her experience and her knowledge is just going to be so helpful in relation to our talk today. She also has two boys, and so she's personally having to think through all of these same things that we are thinking through. So if you will please join me in welcoming Dr. Angela Smith.
Thank you. Let's see. Good morning. Happy to be here today. So we'll just jump in. I'm going to give an introduction about myself, the work that I do. Today we're going to be talking about moving from having identified the problem of screen use and social media to what we can do about it. The author talks about what government and technology companies can do, what schools can do, and what parents can do. We're going to focus on what parents can do for the sake of time, and because most people in here are parents or grandparents. Oh, I don't see my slides. I'm going to share a clinical lens. So I'm a clinical psychologist. The author, Haight, is a social psychologist. So I'm going to give a little bit of a clinical lens, sharing about what I see in my work and how we can look at what the why people are using screens and the impact from that clinical perspective. And then we're also going to talk about the biblical lens. Okay, so I am a mom. My sons are 12 and almost 9. So as Katie mentioned, I am very invested in this as well. And I am a member of First Pres with my husband. We've been coming here since 2005. I'm a lifelong Presbyterian. So I was really happy when Katie was saying that she really pulled together how the clinical or how the book and the Bible can come together to give this framework. And I'm a psychologist. I wish I was able to see my slides. Let me see. Okay, so I work with adults who have anxiety disorders, trauma, obsessive compulsive disorder, a lot of interpersonal issues. I work with a lot of college students, so from individuals who are at Ivy League institutions, large state schools, small liberal arts colleges, across the board. And this, what Jonathan Haight talks about in the book, what we're seeing with social deprivation, sleep deprivation, attention fragmentation, and addiction, I see all of that in a lot of the individuals that I work with. When I ask about sleep, you know, what is your sleep like? Some of them will, it's not uncommon to hear them say, I go to bed at 11 and I get in bed at 11. And then I'll ask, what time do you go to sleep? 2 a.m., 3 a.m. And what are you doing for those 3 to 4 hours that you're in bed? And they are scrolling on TikTok, scrolling on YouTube. Sometimes it is, you know, it's texting with people, but it's primarily just scrolling. And so that sleep deprivation, it impacts their mood, it impacts their focus the next day. We've all experienced that. But you can imagine a 19, 20, 21-year-old who's going to class, doing their activities, trying to study, then spending 3 or 4 hours a night on their phone. It's having a really significant impact on their well-being. So I'm just going to take a moment to talk about, from a clinical lens, how we view screen use. And it's a way of numbing. So experiential avoidance is a term that we use, which is, it's a way of, it's what we do, it's resistance to uncomfortable experiences. So what we're feeling inside our bodies, it can be symptoms of panic. I don't like when my heart is racing, when my stomach is upset, if I feel my face flushing or sweating, that's uncomfortable and I don't like it. I don't like feeling sad, angry, anxious, bored, confused, tired. Those are uncomfortable experiences. I don't like them. I don't like when I have memories of things from the past that are upsetting, when I'm worrying about the future, when I'm thinking about a presentation or a paper for school or a relationship where there's conflict. Those are uncomfortable experiences, and I don't want to feel them. So we call this experiential avoidance. I want to avoid what my own experience is. And this isn't new. It's not, we've been doing this, you know, well before there were screens. I'm going to do something to get away from this. So people use alcohol, drugs, work, shopping, sex, all kinds of things I'm not feeling what I'm feeling right now. I'm going to escape or avoid it. Now that we have screens and we have an easy way to avoid in our pockets, in our hands, it's become much more problematic. So the problem with experiential avoidance is there's several problems with it. One is it keeps us from pursuing and achieving things we want to achieve. If I want to be in a relationship, if I want to do well in school and pursue a certain job, if I like sports and I want to do well, all of that means I could fail. If I'm pursuing something and I don't know how it's going to go, I'm risking failure. If I am interested in some, you know, for teenagers, people in their 20s, they're interested in a relationship. They could be rejected. So if we have something that we desire and we go after it, that requires a certain amount of openness to discomfort. The discomfort of pursuing something and not achieving it, or being rejected, or just not knowing how it's going to go. It creates problems personally and interpersonally. So when we're avoiding how we feel, we might engage in behaviors that cause problems for us. Like here we're talking about screen use, again, drugs, alcohol, all of these things, that the behaviors that we're doing in order to avoid our experience, those create problems. Those also can increase our internal distress. We feel more isolated, more anxious, more sad, as when we're done watching the show, when we're, you know, the next day after a night of drinking. All of these things that we do in the short term to get some relief from distress actually cause more distress in the long term. Thanks, Katie. So that's the paradox. The more that you resist something that's uncomfortable, the more you have it, and the less resilient you are to have it. So there are many problems with experiential avoidance. And the last one, I don't have a picture for it, but it's that all of these experiences are God-given. It's part of being fully human. Feeling the pain of sadness, anger, boredom, fatigue, having physical sensations that are uncomfortable, having a mind that is not always helping me, this is all part of being human. And so when we avoid these experiences, we're avoiding part of our humanness. So this is the lens that I'm coming from when I'm talking with individuals about their screen use, that it's part of this larger context of experiential avoidance. So today, what we're going to do, the problem of screen use, over screen use, social media use. That's been established with the first few speakers. They talked about the research cited in the book that shows, you know, what we've seen in the last 15 years since some of the changes, you know, now that I think it was about 15 years ago when the iPhone introduced the self-facing camera, Facebook introduced the like button. These are some of the things that made phone use more appealing. So the problems of its social deprivation, sleep deprivation, attention troubles, and addiction have been established. So today my purpose is to encourage us to move towards change, to make some changes as parents, so that we can address some of these issues. It's also, you know, biblical to care. So, you know, some in here are parents, so you're here to learn what can you do to help your children. Some in here are grandparents, so you're thinking, what can I do to help my children as they parent, or how can I directly help my grandchildren? There might be some in here who don't have children or grandchildren, but you care about the impact of what's happening with this next generation. So there's several verses here, but the third one, speak up for those who can't speak for themselves. This is a way. And in the book, he talks about coming together, not only as, you know, making changes as individuals, but for the need for society to come together and support parents who are trying to make changes as well. So again, he gives recommendations for parents, schools, tech companies, and government. We're going to focus on parents. I just want to mention what he says about schools. The recommendation is for phone-free schools and for more free play. So it's really simple. A lot of schools have programs now to increase social emotional learning. And the author talks about they're getting kind of complicated or trying to do a lot to address social emotional needs of students, but there are some basic things that can be done that would go a long way to helping that, and these are phone-free schools and more time for free play, like in recess. Tech and government, he's suggesting that technology companies assert a duty of care. This is, you know, there are barriers to that, but they can raise the age of internet adulthood from 13 to 16 and then verify that. So that's the biggest thing, that technology companies, if they care, they would care to verify that someone can't just create an account and say that they are 13 or 16 without any verification process. And then governments can support phone-free schools. So we're going to talk about some things that parents can do to make changes for their family. The first one is to cast a vision for your family. The author asks, what does the good life look like? And last week, Joshua, I like the way that he asked basically the same question, which was, what song do you want your children to sing? So this is years ago, probably 10 years ago, there was an adult Sunday school class that spent several weeks coming up with where couples or individuals work to make a family mission statement. And so we started with identifying values, and then it was a several-week process. But we're coming up with, this is a mission statement for my family. And by doing that, you're bringing some intentionality to what are the priorities of our family. And from there, we can think about how do we spend our time and resources and do those align with the vision and mission of our family. So these are some of the values that our family has. time in nature. And so that might look like taking nature-based vacations. Hospitality, and that might look like, you know, having families over for dinner. Service, doing service projects or serving those in our community who are in need. So this, we're right now talking a little bit away from technology in general and saying, what are the broad things that are important to you, and how does technology fit into that, and how, based on what's important to you, how are you going to spend your time? So in the book, there's discussion about transcendent self and the importance of awe and incorporating these things. And we can see that when we're spending a lot of time on screens and on social media, it's likely pulling us away from other things that would be important to us as families. So the vision that you have for your family, it will shape the lives of your children, and it creates a scaffolding for how you spend your time. So in addition to some of these things, we want to think about how do we talk to our kids about coming back to this clinical perspective, how do we talk to our kids about feelings, including the feeling of boredom? So for a lot of kids, teenagers, this is one of the things that pulls them into their phone use. Like, they feel bored. They don't know what to do. They don't know how to spend their time. And so from a young age, having discussions about boredom and what do we do when we're bored, and it's okay to feel bored, this is something that you can do to so that when that comes up and they're going to grab an iPad or a phone to help bring some awareness, what's motivating you to do that right now? Another thing is to reflect on your own phone use and what you're modeling for your children. So it's very easy to say, like, this is a problem for kids, this is a problem for our children. If we're self-reflective, we might recognize it can also be a problem for us. And of course, there's a lot of benefits to being able to communicate on the phone, but communicating with your kids about that, they will see you on your phone. But being able to say, I'm responding to messages right now, I'm answering this email, telling them this is what I'm doing, and then keeping it brief, and so they're not just seeing you. What could look like scrolling on your phone, maybe you are doing work, maybe you're reaching out to a friend, you're checking in on a friend, you're doing something that is in line with your values, and it happens to be on the phone, but that's in that moment being able to say that to them. Okay. So casting a vision for your family, considering how that relates to how you're spending your time. That's one major thing that parents can do. Another one is talking to your kids. So in the book, the author gives some specific suggestions, and we'll talk about those. But what I want to emphasize is kind of nesting these specific suggestions into a broader conversation about technology. So anything that we are wanting to impart to our kids that's important, whether it be about, you know, substance use, about sexuality, about screen time and technology, starting with a broad conversation, having conversations early and often. For those of you who have teenagers, I was just talking to someone before this who said, like, I have very little time. We'll talk for a moment, and then they'll say, now I need to do my homework. And then nothing will get a kid to move to their homework faster than a parent trying to have a meaningful conversation. So, like, no, now it's time for homework. So being able to have very short, brief, frequent conversations, that these restrictions, recommendations, they're nested in that. So the first one is, you know, knowledge is power. Speak to them early and often. You want your children to understand how the restrictions fit into into your broader family vision, into the values that you have. It's being proactive rather than reactive. So if you as an individual or you as a couple talk about, we want to take some of these specific recommendations that kids don't have phones and smartphones until ninth grade, they don't have social media until they're 16. We don't want to wait until they're in sixth grade asking for a phone to say, oh no, we decided that's not until ninth grade. From a young age, you can talk to kids about, and this is something Ryan and I did from very young, phones. At that time, we were saying phones will be, when you're in eighth grade, you get a phone. And so when they're in third grade and have some friends getting phones and saying, this friend got a phone, then we say, in eighth grade, that's how our family is going to do it. And actually now, we moved it to ninth grade based on this recommendation. But it's being proactive. So you're setting the stage, you're having these conversations, so by the time they're really coming and asking, they already have in mind what you've put out there. So it's empowering for parents, so you're not in this constant state of, now they're coming at me with another request, I'm saying no, I'm trying to explain why, but it's setting up this dynamic of where there could be more conflict. It also is really beneficial to the children to connect the restrictions to those broader values. It's respectful to them. It's showing them that I entrust you to have more knowledge and understanding. I'm relating to you in a way, not as an equal, but as someone who can take in information. So it's a sign of respect for them. And it will help them build on your family scaffolding so that when they get to the point where they are making more independent decisions, they're more likely to make choices that you might wish for them, because again, it started with this scaffolding and this family vision. It's been bolstered by conversations throughout their life, and then the hope is that would carry into them making these wiser, independent decisions. So the point about starting broad, moving narrow, is, you know, we've kind of touched on that. You want to talk about, you know, technology use in general, there are benefits to it, there are negative consequences to it as well, before getting to these are some specific restrictions and limits that we have. So I mentioned the one about in the book, he talks about ninth grade for smartphones, 16 for social media. He also talks about it coming together as a community. So it is really difficult if you're the only family that you know of that is setting similar restrictions. And so he talks about identifying 10 other families who are going to have a similar approach, deciding together, this is what we're doing. And so even for your kids to know they're not alone in it, they are not alone in it. There are other families doing this, but for them to know who the families are, that's really helpful as well. Let's check our time. Okay. Another one to consider is the opportunity costs. So Joshua talked about that a little bit last week. All the time that we spend on the phone. So coming back to these college students who are from 11 to 2 scrolling TikTok, there's an opportunity cost to that. They could be sleeping. They could be working on their paper. They could be socializing, chatting with a friend. They could be doing so many other things. Probably most important would be sleeping. But for them to really understand, again, starting at a young age, when you're on the phone, you are not, and this is kids playing at the park, you're not playing at the park, you're not having conversations. If you're if you're scrolling your phone in the car, you're missing out on time to connect. Again, these things, if you start the conversations in high school, you might get more of a response like they don't really care to connect with you in the car. But the earlier you start and helping them see, like, There have been times when I have driven my son and his friends. My son doesn't have a phone. There are friends who have phones. And it's really the worst kind of car ride because there are kids scrolling on their phones. My son is sitting next to me in the front seat. I'm trying to talk to them, like trying to get conversation going, which it feels like pulling teeth. It's really uncomfortable. If kids don't have their phones, if you tell them, this is a phone-free car, we're in our car, we're not using phones, so they, and if they respect that, it is much, it's much more enjoyable. Whether they're talking or not talking a lot, it is a more pleasant experience for the kids, too. The youth directors have talked about that, or Alex and Lee have talked about the benefit of, you know, the kids not having their phones on the youth trips, where at first they might complain or think it's going to be really awful to not have a phone for a week, but then they, it's so freeing. By the end, they're saying, I'm so glad I didn't have my phone. It was really nice to not have my phone. And so providing them experiences, setting some restrictions so that they can experience for themselves the freedom that comes from not having that. And then the last point about these discussions is revise and revisit. This is something, again, like for any important conversation, just like early, often, you know, brief and frequent, those, that's kind of a guideline for important discussions. Revise and revisit is something that I talk about a lot with parents that I work with in, you know, in parenting, that we have new experiences, we read things, we have discussions with friends, we learn, and we decide, I'm going to do it differently. And that's okay. That's beneficial. And so revisiting a conversation with our kids, saying, we've been doing it this way. It's been where you can have your phone in the car and look at it, but I've been thinking about it, or I read something, or I had this experience, and we're going to try something different. And this is a new thing we're going to do. We're not looking at phones in the car. And you could say, we're going to try it for a week and see what it's like. You could say, this is the rule for now. And this is why. And so to not be afraid to do that, that's a life skill. As you learn something new, you make a change based on that. And so revising your approach and then communicating about it. Okay. So the other thing that parents can do is pray for schools and advocate. We're going to talk just for a moment. So the problem of screen use and social media, it's been established right now. We've been talking about what parents can do, changes you can make. Sometimes when we talk about making change, it can bring up anxiety, can bring up a sense of shame. You know, there are a lot of families in here who maybe have young kids. They're 5 and 2 and newborn, and like this is useful because they can think, I'm gonna go about it in this way, and maybe they're feeling confident. But if you have kids who are in college and high school and middle school, and you haven't been doing things in this way, it might feel overwhelming, or you might be thinking it's too late, or I can't do it. It feels kind of hopeless. And so that's one of the things, you know, working with individuals really to make change in their life. That's, you know, that's a big part of what I'm doing, is helping people make changes. One of the biggest barriers to that is shame, buying into these thoughts, I'm bad, I'm not good enough, I'm never going to be able to do it. That will get in the way of trying to do anything differently. So we're just going to take a moment to look at, you know, it is scientifically based and scripturally based that we can make change. So it's well established. Neuroplasticity our brain's ability to adapt and reorganize and form new neural pathways. We do that well into the late decades of life. So we can make change even when there are well-established patterns. It is harder, but we can. The Bible talks about we were once dead and made alive in Christ. So these go together. So shame hinders change. It results in kind of hiding, denying that there's an issue, and a way to overcome shame is to actually just put it out there, like sharing it with another person. And I think Courtney actually talked about this in the sermon last week, sharing with one another, not only recognizing in myself this is something that that I've been struggling with, but sharing it with another person. And in that, there is freedom, that this isn't something I have to hide. And often we get feedback that we're not being judged, we're not alone in it, and from there we can move. So start from where you are, not to make comparisons. So again, here we're talking to a group of individuals with varied various stages of life. If you are parents of teenagers, and not to compare yourself to parents of very young children, you might wish that you were starting from where they are. You might wish that you had this knowledge or this understanding 10 years ago. But you can't start from where they are. You can only start from where you are. That's a good place to start from. It's the only place you can start from. And God is with you here where you are in the changes that you are considering making today. So we're going to move into a time of discussion, discussing maybe some changes that you would like to make as individuals, as couples, as families. But I just want to take a moment of silence first, so we can ask God to speak to each of us individually about a change that we can make, and then we'll move into the discussion questions. So if you just can quiet yourself, close your eyes, look into the distance if you prefer. We're just taking a moment now, asking God, who is the source of all wisdom, to speak to us now. Okay, so we're going to now turn our attention to your table. There are some discussion questions, so have about 10 or so minutes to share with each other. Okay, we're going to go ahead and come back together as a group. I'm happy to hear some lively discussions. Would anyone like to share? Good. Would anyone like to share what was discussed at your table? Something that that stood out? Changes that were discussed? Challenges. Sabrina, like I was about to look at you, like I bet Sabrina has something to share.
Ages in this market are either in college or are adults on their own.
Yes. Yes. So Sabrina was saying they, at this table, a lot of older kids in college, out of college, and how do we have the discussion now? And they were talking about just sharing. This is a book that we read. These are some of the things that were talked about. And what do you think about this? What if this had been, what if we had had these rules, restrictions when you were in eighth grade? What do you think it would have been like? And rather than saying, these are all the things that we learned, and just and then they would just take it in, like, okay, but they might have their own thoughts and perspective, and I love that.
And also it's time for them to revise and revisit, because
yes,
they are a product of this ancient generation. These graphs that we see, that's what they grew up in.
Yes. Giving them an opportunity to self-reflect rather than, because they are at ages when, like, you're not putting, or maybe there are few rules and restrictions in general in life right now. They're independent, and so, but this is a chance for them to really reflect and think about it. And that's what I was saying to Katie, you know, in that break, that, I mean, that's you know, I was saying, you know, change is possible, and neuroplasticity, but it really, that's what I, every day in my office, I'm working with people, and they're not children. They're at least 18. So many college students, it might take a year to 4 years before we're seeing some transformational change, but it's happening. And so, and it happens with people in their 50s and 60s and 70s. And so that, as we have new information and insight and understanding and use that to self-reflect, like we can make really meaningful changes. Other thoughts? Yes, so he's asking, what does it look like, what does it take for someone to recognize a change is needed? And that's, you know, I was mentioning seeing so many college students who are at an Ivy League school have done very well in high school. They're 3 years into college, you know, they're thriving to some degree, but then they're recognizing, like, still, I'm having an issue with anxiety, depression, and often the discussion about phone use, it will be brought in, because, and they'll begin to recognize how these are connected. That's one part of what is impacting their experience. And so often they don't want to acknowledge that because it's hard. That's one of the things they're using to cope with things being hard, or like we talked about, you know, wanting to numb. There's so much comparison. When I'm getting caught up with comparing myself to someone else, that brings up discomfort. And if I'm accustomed to going to my phone just to, like, I don't want to feel this, I don't want to think about this, now I'm just scrolling, but actually now I'm comparing more because I'm just looking at what my friends are doing. But it's hard. It is hard to make this change. And so they often don't want to kind of acknowledge that actually those hours that you're spending, it is contributing to how fatigued you feel. It's contributing to the struggle that you're feeling to concentrate. It is contributing to all of these maladaptive thoughts and thoughts of comparison, and it can take time for them to really recognize it. And once they do, then it's easier to, they're motivated like to make those changes. But it's, you know, here I might be spending like hours with someone and I'm not their parent. And so I'm not telling them you need to, and so there's some space for them to do that reflection and make those changes. It is hard, and that's why we need also community. Like, it doesn't have to come through a therapist. To like having community, hearing other people's experiences, having other, you know, the youth leaders or other adults who are pouring into their lives, sharing, because it's hard to hear these things from a parent. Other thoughts or questions? Okay. Well, I'm going to close us in prayer, and then we'll go. Lord, we thank you for this time together, for the ways that you have spoken to each of us over these weeks. We ask that you would teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Give us the courage to speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, the courage to make countercultural choices. Energize us to keep these conversations going in our communities and spheres of influence. Show us how to be a voice for the voiceless in schools around us. Lord, we ask that you help us walk in humility, accepting that we are not in control. And move us to exercise responsibility where we have privilege and ability. Pour out your grace where we fall short. Help us to live lives this week that glorify and honor you. We pray in your name. Amen. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Angela. So a few housekeeping items. So next week is our last week of the series, and it will be very different. I'm very excited. We're going to have actually a panel discussion. So one of our youth directors, who is Gen Z himself, and then our speakers will be back up here, possibly one other person that we're going to have to open up the floor for discussion and questions. One way you can help me with this, though, is if you have a particular question you know already, if you will either write it down on that piece of paper that has like a sign-in, you don't even have to put your name attached to it, or I'm going to send an email tomorrow or Tuesday reminding you and with a form where you can input a question. It would be great for me to have questions before the day of. I will have some already written, but if you have a burning question so that I can filter through them, and if we have multiple of the same, I can combine those questions. That will just be helpful on my end. So if you already know a question you have, please write it down today. I'll send a reminder email first of the week. Second, I'm very excited. We are going to end up having a landing page with all of the resources so you don't have to dig through your emails. So hopefully by end of week, that is up with all of the recordings, all of the handouts, possibly some other resources that we curate, and that will be available for the indefinite future for you to even send friends to who couldn't make this series. I think that is all that I have for you. So thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to come. Thank you to the speakers who have put so much time and effort into this series to help us think through these things and provide a space for us to talk about them. So with that said, you are free to go or free to mingle. Please grab some food on the way out. I say take a couple extra and you've got free lunch for your kids. Okay, so grab some to go.